Good evening, friends of the Bulkley Valley and beyond. My name is Thomas Tom Roper, and you are listening to CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 on your FM dial. My program, On the Ropes, is broadcasting from the Cassia territory of the Gidimdum clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en.
The words she spoke, blow up your TV, throw away your paper, go to the country, build you a home, plant a little garden, eat a lot of peaches, try and find Jesus on your own. Well, I sat there at the table and acted real naive, for I knew that topless lady had something up her sleeve. Well, she danced around the barroom and she did the hoochie coo. Yeah, she sang her song all night long, telling me what to do. Blow up your TV, throw away your paper, go to the country, build you a home, plant a little garden, eat a lot of peaches, try and find Jesus on your own. Well, I was young and hungry and about to leave that place, when just as I was leaving, well, she looked me in the face. I said, you must know the answer. She said, no, but I'll give it a try. And to this very day, we've been living our way. And here is the reason why. We blew up our TV, threw our paper, went to the country, built us a home, had a lot of children, fed them on peaches. They all found Jesus on their own.
Well, that was a pretty cool song, Eric. And I've got a little bio on John. That he's an American singer-songwriter, kind of in the country folk genre. He was cited as one of the most influential songwriters of his generation. Prine is known for his blend of humorous lyrics about love, life, and current events, with some elements of social commentary and satire. John was born in Maywood, Illinois in 1946, learned to play the guitar at 14, and he worked in Chicago as a mailman before he started writing and singing songs as a hobby. He released his debut album in 1971. Unfortunately, John struggled with health problems throughout his entire life, and he died of complications of COVID in 2020. Earlier that year, John received the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. So that's kind of an interesting situation. Now, Eric, getting back to your program of life, I found out that you had attended Langara College back in the day. I also went to college there, and I just was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you decided to go to college, how that might have led you to the Bulkley Valley.
Well, I'd have to say, Tom, that after I got out of high school, or all the way through high school, I never really had much of an interest in gardening. My grandfather was an English gardener. He was well known for his gardening skills, so my mom liked to garden, but it wasn't something that I was particularly fond of. And so I wanted to go to university, but I needed to get my marks up. So I went to college, and the first semester, lived with a friend in a basement suite. We both went to college and then basically went home. I lived in Squamish at that time, so we were going to school in Vancouver. We go home every weekend. And the second year, I needed a place again, and a friend of mine who was a year older than me that had left Squamish, but I knew him back in the day, and he told me that he had a house, and it was a communal house in Vancouver. And it was quite a mixture of people in there. You know, there was a couple of hippies that sold the Georgia Strait and collected welfare and made crafts at Christmas time to sell. And there were three other people that were into publishing there. And so my friend, after I was there for about 4 months, I had actually fallen into an English course, a creative writing course that the professor of the course actually had written the textbook, and we got it in mimeograph form. And he really encouraged me to write, and I decided that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a writer, and the North was very prominent at that time with the North Slope Oil and everything, and I really thought that's what I wanted to do, was go up north and write about the North. He was quite into Back to the Land movement himself at that point, and he told me he wanted to write a book on rural skills, and I was a beekeeper at the time, so I said, okay, I'll do an article on bees. So we wound up moving up to Leavitt Lake in Squamish to put this book together, and it, you know, we did a bunch of work, but it didn't come together right away, and we moved it down to my mom's basement, and we put the book together and got published. It was called Cloudburst, A Handbook of Rural Skills. So it was through him that really sort of started my Back to the Land movement. And I like to say that when you're that age, you know, 20, 19, 21, your life will spin on a dime. And my life pretty well spun on a dime, and I wound up coming to the Poke Valley.
Well, that's pretty interesting, Eric, how, I don't know if you want to call it fate, but just the way that life unfolds itself. And so just on that same pattern, when we're talking about the Back to the Land movement, one of the sort of the second program of finding the land and building a house is kids. You want to raise a couple of kids. And of course, you and your wife, Kathy, did raise a couple of kids within the rural lifestyle. You were able to help the kids learn soccer skills in the summer and cross-country skiing skills in the winter. Were those sports things that you had done as a child, Eric?
Well, definitely. I played soccer all the way through my childhood, right up until I was 21. And skiing, my dad was Swedish. He was, at that time when he skied, they did a lot of ski jumping. But he also, we lived in the upper town site of Britannia Mines, which it was called Mount Shear. It was actually where I was born, so it's a ghost town long gone now. But he had a ski cabin, and he would go off skiing up there. I think I got my first pair of skis when I was 5, and when I later moved to Squamish, I used to go to Diamond Head, and my friend and I would take everything we could to make sure our skis stayed on. We'd take wire and pliers, and didn't have ski boots. I wore my soccer boots, and I had my dad's old bear trap bindings on the skis. And we did that for a number of years, and we upgraded our equipment a little bit, and then Whistler opened. And so skiing, yeah, was always a big part of my life.
That's very interesting, Eric. And actually, myself, we skied at Whistler a couple times, but it was always a little more expensive than we could handle. And we were generally brought up on Mount Seymour. But Eric, in discussing that about the situation with your kids, I just wanted to bring up this point that when you came up here, one of your goals was to live by selling honey. And I just wondered about that transition from the reality that we weren't making enough money on the honey to you were talking about working as a bricklayer apprentice. Can you give me a little bit more on that?
Well, the day that I started at this job as a helper, another guy who became actually, he was a good friend, and actually we became partners later on in life, but he started as an apprentice, and in the meantime, we had found this property, and we bought it, and so we had a five-year mortgage, so I knew I had to work for 5 years. I figured I might as well get a trade out of it. So I started that, and at the same time, I had this dream about being a beekeeper, so I think I had about 28 hives, and I wound up with 2,000 pounds of honey, a ton of honey, and it was fall, and it was a real busy construction year. I just didn't have time to do it, so I kind of cut back after that, and eventually came up with a number of hives that I could easily extract the honey in a week's work or something like that, and make a little side money, and I continued on in the masonry, and after finishing he finally gave me an apprentice after I worked as a helper for about 4 years, and I worked as a journeyman for 1 year, and then I went on my own, which had, it had its ups and downs with the economy. Some years were good, and some years were bad. Of course, you couldn't always work in the wintertime. But it gave me a lot of opportunity to interact with my kids and interact with the quick school. I spent a lot of time coaching just the school teams as well as a team in the Bokeh Valley League.
So you actually... it kind of gave you the opportunity to become a community leader, in a sense, Eric. If you can feel this mix coming in, I would really like to play another song, and I've got a couple lined up here. The one that I would really like is this bricklayer song. It kind of brings us a little bit back to your job, and it provides a little bit of humor. So I've got a group here called the Corries. They're out of Scotland, and they've got a pretty interesting take. We'll give it a shot here.
Dear sir, I write this note to you to tell you of my plight. For at the time of writing it, I'm not a pretty sight. My body is all black and blue, my face a deathly grey, and I write this note to say why I am not at work today. While working on the 14th floor, some bricks I had to clear, but tossing them down from such a height was not a good idea. The foreman wasn't very pleased, he is an awkward sod, and he said I had to cart them down the ladders in me hod. Well, clearing all these bricks by hand, it was so very slow, so I hoisted up a barrel and secured a rope below. But in me haste to do the job, I was too blind to see that a barrel full of building bricks was heavier than me. And so when I untied the rope, the barrel fell like lead, and clinging tightly to the rope, I started up instead. I shot up like a rocket, and to my dismay I found that halfway up I met the bloody battle coming down. Well, the battle broke me shoulder as to the ground it sped. And when I reached the top, I banged the pulley with me head. But I clung on tightly, numb with shock from this almighty blow, while the battle spilled out half its bricks some 14 floors below. Now when these bricks had fallen from the battle to the floor, I then outweighed the battle and so started down once more. But I clung on tightly to the rope, me body racked with pain, and halfway down I met the bloody battle once again. The force of this collision halfway down the office block caused multiple abrasions and a nasty case of shock. But I clung on tightly to the rope as I fell towards the ground, and I landed on the broken bricks the battle had scattered round. Well, as I lay there on the floor, I thought I'd passed the worst. But the battle hit the pulley wheel, and then the bottom burst. A shower of bricks rained down on me, I didn't have a hope. As I lay there bleeding on the ground, I let go the bloody rope. The battle now being heavier, it started down once more. It landed right across me as I lay there on the floor. It broke three ribs in my left arm, and I can only say, I hope you'll understand why I am not at work today.
That is a very cute song, Eric, and I actually have heard you play that. We'll just discuss your musical aspirations a little bit further down the show. I just wanted to say a couple words about the Corries. They became Scotland's most popular and enduring folk act in the early 60s, and they've taken the responsibility of preserving traditional Scottish music. Roy Williamson and Ronnie Brown originated the duo's collaboration, which unfortunately ended with the death of Roy in 1990. Ronnie is still continuing, though, as a soloist. So, Eric, in picking up where we kind of have left off, we talked a little bit about the Bees. I just wanted you to give me a little bit of information about when you decided to become a master bee. What would you call yourself? Was that a master beekeeper?
Yeah. Well, I guess after, you know, the ideal situation I guess everybody wants to find is, you know, to make some kind of income from something they love to do. And, like, the bricklaying, I kind of like to think that I didn't pick the bricklaying, it picked me. It was just the way the situation arose, and I made my living on it. But I did, you know, keep bees for, well, it's actually been 55 years that I've had bees. My dad and I started way back in Squamish. I had good friends that had bees, and I talked my dad into getting some, and he actually passed away only a couple years later, so that was my baby for a long time. I eventually thought, well, I would go and take my master's at Simon Fraser, So that's a one-week course. I got my Master Beekeeper certificate. And then I did the teaching thing, thinking that, well, yeah, I could go around teaching beekeeping. And I did that a couple of times. And, you know, my sister was a teacher, too, in elementary school. And there's a lot of preparation that goes into teaching. And, you know, I wasn't probably prepared to do all that much, so I kind of abandoned that. But getting back to Tom's mention about the music, I got quite involved in the Round Lake Hall all the way through. I think I was an active member there for over 40 years, but I can't remember, it was 87 or something, we started doing coffee houses at the little chalet on the West End Road, and after the renovations in, was that 2009, we moved the coffee house to the hall, and it was really successful. We were lucky, we had a couple of community members that volunteered to make dinners. We had a couple of dinners every season, and we, you know, get 80-100 people out there. And so it also gave me, at one point, I started going to guitar camp. And I had a banjo from way back in the In 1969, I was walking down Robson Street, and there was a street band out there, and they were playing Maxwell's Silver Hammer. And it was a washtub bass and a banjo and a guitar, too. And I thought, man, I want to play banjo. So I bought a banjo, but I never really learned to play it too very well. I just chorded it a bit. And eventually I'd bought my wife a guitar, and I started playing that, and then went to guitar camp. And all this time, I still hadn't quite given up on being a writer, so I started writing songs. And my highlight is that I actually have a co-write with a friend on a children's album that won a Juno. I had a couple of $30 checks and a couple of $2.87 checks. So it's not so much the money, though I've often dreamed about there's an angle I could make some money at. So I've got a million. I've written 24 songs.
Can we play one there?
Yeah, we'll play one now. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what I would like to do here is slide in another mix song as we're coming up to the halfway point of our program. So before I do a studio recognition, we'll try and listen to one of Eric's favorite songs that he's written. And he has written quite a few that are quite funny, but this one is about his bees. It's called God's Tears. We'll just see how if we can.
I'd just like to add into this, Tom, that when I wrote this song, it was after taking a songwriting seminar with, what's his name, Todd Butler. And the idea was that sometimes you don't let your audience know what you're writing about. You let them discover as it goes along. Oh, and this was my attempt at that.
Okay, well, let's see if we can get this playing. It doesn't seem to be wanting to start up on our machine here. It seems like that is on a... we're going to have to play with this a little bit more, Eric, but it doesn't seem to want to be taking a call. So is there a different area there that we can...
Isn't it this one here?
Yeah. Yeah, we're on that spot right there. We're not getting any sound out of that, so we'll take a little move on. to our mid-program station recognition. So I'd like to take this moment to remind listeners of our station call sign, CICK 93.9 Smithers Community Radio on your FM dial. And also take the opportunity to thank our sponsors for their continued support. Bugwood Bean, Accounting on Broadway, Classic Sanitary, and BV Concert Association. So we don't seem to be able to pull that song up at the moment, Eric, but we'll take another look at it. But while we do that, let's just move ahead into a little more of your lifestyle. And it seems that making chimneys and laying blocks is a great way to meet people. You seem to actually know everyone in the valley. It seemed to be a very good trade and fit your personality well. But you know, you also had honed other skills over the years. You built up a pretty spectacular greenhouse, and your gardening produce is second to none. Another skill that you brought from your early Squamish days, Eric, was fishing. I've had several occasions to join you on the water, and you definitely have skill. Maurice Lake, Caldo Creek, Babine Fence, those are just a few places I remember fondly. I know you even were tying your own flies at one time. Do you still do that, Eric?
I haven't for a few years. It's mostly my vision isn't what it used to be, although I keep thinking about getting a big overhead projector.
Yeah.
I know out in Quick there, Priscilla Ross used to run the garage for years there, and she had a huge big magnifier over top of her table in the back room there, and I'm sure that would work. I have so many flies. I tied flies for so many years. I started when I was actually 14. There was a sporting goods store that opened up, and the guy who opened it was one of our baseball coaches. There was a number of families back then that had two or three, you know, guys in there that had grown up, and they were great coaches. And he started this store, and I started putting two patterns, a Royal Coachman and a Black Gnat. I would sell them in the store. And that was another scheme to try and make money to make ends meet, but it was probably less lucrative than anything else that I ever tried. But I used to go to town, and every time I went to town, I came home with a new product for tying flies. I used to pick up road kills. I had cages for roosters, because it's unbelievable, really, that we've bred our chickens for meat and eggs, but not for feathers. And there's a few people that have, and some of those rooster necks, believe it or not, are worth hundreds of dollars. I bought two myself, split them with another guy, so, you know, it only cost us a couple $100, but I had so much material. I have to, you know, say that I guess I was probably a bit of a material hoarder when it came to fly tying stuff. Magazines, I subscribed to numerous magazines that I had all categorized, and consequently, I filled my fly boxes. I kept buying more boxes to put flies in.
Eric, what about the actual fishing skill? Like, you started that out fairly early on in life?
Well, I did, actually, back in Squamish. I was probably about 16. I had a little motorbike, and I could had a case for my rod, and I was fly fishing, you know. I what happened was the year before I came up here, when I was with my friend, we went out to the Chilkoot country and we were fishing out there, and I lost my fly rod. So I didn't have fly rod. I stopped fly fishing for a long time. And then a friend of mine was bugging me all the time about making him a dry fly, but it was a special dry fly. It was a sack fly, which is made out of burlap and body, and it's a wet fly. Burlap does not float like anything, you know. Mm. So right. I had tied one, and before I gave a chance to give it to him, I went out to the river, and I had bought this cheap fiberglass rod from Army and Navy, and I had it in the truck. I tied it on, I threw it out there, and I'm kind of daydreaming, and all of a sudden a steelhead took a big swirl at it, and I whipped it back into the spot, and he grabbed it, and I hooked it, and just as I hooked it, the reel fell off the rod, and he broke the line, took off. I took off, too. I ran into town and bought a fiberglass reel and a whole new outfit.
That sounds like a really good story, Eric. Listen, we have another song that you've kind of liked along the way. It's a fishing song by a fella, a Canadian fella called Tim Hugh. It's called Master Crafter. So I'm going to just mix that in while we're on the idea of fishing stories. Here we go.
Fisherman through and through, had a reel in my hand since I was two. Got a large mouth when I was five, set a world record without trying. Lures and spoons and shiny things, you ought to see the tackle box I'll bring. I guess I'll say it like this, I have a gift for hooking fish. I'm a master caster, drifter, waiter, tackle, troller, trout slayer, walleye wrangler, steelhead angler, bassmaster, spin caster, high-ender, rod bender, fly tire, for hire, catch 'em where I can. I'm an ocean, lake, stream, pond, slough, river, reservoir, and damn fine fisherman. I caught everything you can catch. It's a mighty list, so please don't ask. I broke a lot of scales in my day. Most of my fish too big to weigh. You think I've gone overboard, spinning tails never heard before. I give you my guarantee, I'm a living legend in the lake country. I'm a master caster, drifter, waiter, tackle, troller, trout slayer, walleye wrangler, steelhead angler, bassmaster, spin caster, high-ender, rod bender, fly tire, for hire, catch 'em where I can. I'm an ocean, lake, stream, pond, slough, river, reservoir, and damn fine fisherman. Fishermen and politicians, they're both hard to trust. Bend and stretch and stack the facts, nobody knows how much. Pound for pound, when it comes down to whose tongue is more loose, us fishermen have honor, we're bound to tell the truth. Wishing for good fishing, tight lines and good times. If you land a beauty in your net, you'll have a day you won't forget. If you break a line, it's just as well, then you'll have a large one to tell. The best story at the end of the day is always about the one that got away. Master caster, drifter, waiter, tackle, troller, scale slayer, sockeye angler, bassmaster, spin caster, high-ender, rod bender, fly tire, for hire, catch 'em where I can. I'm an ocean, lake, stream, pond, slough, river, reservoir, and damn fine fisherman. And that's the truth.
All right, Eric, we got that song, and that is one cute song that you pulled out there. Tim Huss was born in Nelson, B.C., and presently he's based out of Calgary, Alberta. His bio states that Tim's voice is sweeter than a Husqvarna chainsaw. He's got a wit that's sharper than a rusty barbed wire, and a list of songs longer than a Saskatchewan fence line. I thought that was kind of cute. The best boot stomping, mining, logging, truck driving, and cowboy songs from coast to coast. So it's kind of interesting layout for Tim Huss.
He's also being compared to...
Corb Lund?
No. Getting his name now. He passed away, I believe. But
You're stomping
Tom. How could I forget?
Yeah, exactly. You're looking right at him.
Yeah.
So, Eric, we've gone through and done a little bit of discussing on the involvement that you had at the Round Lake. You've talked about your guitar and going to guitar camp, and I'd like to just kind of slip back a little bit now. If you can tell me a little bit, I understood that you've had an opportunity to go to Sweden, and I know I've been aware that you've been of the Swedish descent, and that you've never been to Sweden in your entire adult life, and I wonder if you can kind of sort of put that a little bit around your dad and your mom, your dad's story, and then how you got back to your dad's hometown.
Yeah, it was a pretty incredible story, really. I had last spring decided to kind of start looking up a lot of people that I knew back in college days and that I hadn't seen in 50 years. And one of them was the fellow that I moved back up in the woods there to put the book together with, and I never heard from him. After I moved up here, he sent me a box of books. He published a whole bunch of books, and I never heard any more from him, and so I actually tracked him down a couple of years ago, and this spring I went there, and I had told him that, well, I should back up here a little bit, like... My dad was born in Sweden, and when he turned 19, he got some kind of a little bit of an inheritance, is the story that I've been told. So he decided to go to Canada. That was 1929 in May. He left, and he came to the Golden Donald area, B.C.
Golden B.C., you're saying?
B.C., yeah. He had an uncle there, and he went to see him, and of course the Depression hit, and he never made it back. He got kind of stuck. He rode the rails, and he worked work project of building the Big Bend Highway, which is now underneath Lake Kennebasco, but I have pictures of the old camp there with the tents and him standing out there with his, I don't know what the fashions were at the times, but he's got some white shoes that look like they're maybe from Sweden or something, you know. Anyway, I mentioned to my friend Vic that I'd always wanted to go back there, but it was kind of a
pipe dream, what do you call it?
Yeah, what's the other way of calling it?
Well,
you want to do it before you die.
Yeah, like a bucket list, you're
bucket
saying.
Bucket list, that's the word I'm looking for, yeah. And so I mentioned that I wasn't thinking about it, and then when I got home, he sent me a message, said, I decided that I would buy you a return trip to Sweden.
Wow.
So I did that, and, you know, it was, I'm still recovering.
Yeah.
I can hardly talk about it without tearing up because it was so wonderful to meet my family there.
It's pretty emotional, and especially after this length of time. And your dad never made it back.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he got working at the mines there, and then ended up passing away.
Yeah, like he worked on the relief gangs and stuff, and then in 1933 got a job at Britannia Mine. And he had met my mom, who grew up in the Donald area near Golden. And they went to Britannia, and he worked there for 30 years until the mine closed down. And that's when we moved to Squamish. And he told me stories, all kinds of stories about Sweden. How he, you know, used to fish for pike along the river. So
did you fish for pike?
And I fished in that same river for pike right there. Like the river runs, my relatives still have the farm. We call it the farm, although they're not farming anymore. It's a country home for them. They have several. The house that my dad grew up in is still there. They're still using that house. And there's three houses on there. There are two houses and another residence where I got to stay, right beside the river. It's a beautiful place.
It sounds like it was an amazing trip.
Fantastic.
Bring that back. Well, listen, I'd like to slide in another mix song that you've got picked out for us, and this is from one of your, you really like this fella. His name is Hayes Carl. And he's got a song kind of about your Swedish family, we could call it. It's called Good Friends. So we'll drive that in right now.
We used to run around, skipping school and drinking beer, wondering when the good Lord would get us out of here. But now those days are gone, and everything has changed. It's all been turned around, everybody's rearranged. And I'm thinking, hey, hey, where did all my good friends go? Maybe someplace far away. Where did all my good friends go? Well, Dougie went to prison for selling all his pot, and Rick's in California being something that he's not. And Robbie went to law school, we're all glad he did. But every time I call, I end up talking to his kid and thinking, hey, hey, where did all my good friends go? Or maybe someplace far away. Where did all my good friends go? The Navy to run around and drink, but they finally let him go after 6 months in the brain. And Richie went to college, he's working night and day. He's been there almost 9 years, but he'll get out someday. Hey, hey, where did all my good friends go? Or maybe someplace far away.
Well, Eric, that is a pretty sweet little song by Hayes Carl. I've got a little bio on him. He was born in Houston, Texas in 1976. Got his first guitar at 15 and started writing immediately with influences from the likes of Bob Dylan and John Prine. Hayes graduated from college in Arkansas in 1998 and returned to Texas to collaborate with Leanne Womack, and his songs appeared in the 2010 movie Country Strong. So, Eric, we're sort of getting ourselves close to the end of our show. I just got sort of one more question that I wanted to put forward to you. I know that you've retired, and I've always felt that retiring for working people can provide a little bit of a challenge of what are we going to do to encourage us to get up and enjoy the day. And it seems to me that you found your way returning to your love of rocks. You bought a rock cutting saw, and it's kind of reopened your interest and even persuaded you to join the Lapidary Club out of Burns Lake and participate in their exploration adventures. You seem very confident in that lifestyle, Eric. Is that true?
Well, I guess all I can say is that 30, 40 years ago, I bought a rock tumbler because I was interested. I would say that my love of rocks goes back to living at Mount Shear. Was a mine, and you know, there were sparkly rocks everywhere, and as a kid we couldn't help but picking up sparkly rocks. But Squamish is well known for its rocks as well. Anyway, I collected rocks for fireplaces, and I collected rocks my whole life, and I finally broke down and bought a tumbler, and that was the beginning of my latest and current
adventure.
Yeah, I don't know if adventure is the right word. There's another word that's better, but it's obsession.
Yeah, exactly.
So right now I have both, you know, my kitchen table, my dining room table, and half of my basement full of rocks, and rocks everywhere, rocks outside. I even found a rock in my bed. So I don't know what to do. I think I may need an intervention.
Would you consider yourself a hoarder?
A collector.
A collector is a much nicer word. Yeah, exactly. Well, Eric, that has been a very interesting and fun listening to your music selections and talking to you about your life. I do hope my listeners have enjoyed this program. And I thank you for giving us the opportunity to get to know you a little bit better. This is Thomas Tom Roper, CICK Radio 93.9 on your FM dial. Hoping you can join me next week, Monday, September 23rd, 2024 at 6 p.m. when I will be talking with Jim DeVille, instructor and professional ukulele performer from Detroit, Michigan. Remember, my program is recorded and archived. Go to smithersradio.com on your computer and click on Schedule, top left. Scroll down to On the Ropes, Monday at 6 p.m. So we'll see you on the flip side.